This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks everybody for tuning in today. Sunday, August 3rd, a beautiful fall day. Enjoy the weather while we can, boys and girls. A show that I always love doing, local education. And actually by local in this case will be a little bit about state. We'll probably bring in a federal topic or two because the government always sticking their nose in our business. Don't tread on me. I don't say that very often. Our guest today, Pam Moran, she's the superintendent of Albemarle County School System. Good morning, Pam.
Morning to you, Rick. It's a delight to be here with you on such a beautiful day in August. Schools are about to start up again.
Yes, they are. Also with us today, new to the area. I didn't realize that until I started doing my homework. Nelson County School Superintendent, Jeff. Is it Comer?
Yes.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here this morning.
I'm talking to Jeff. I call him up. As Pam has been here regularly, as we do the school superintendent thing, it usually seems to work in August. Their vacation time is over, prepping for the new school year. And I'm like, gosh, let's see. I've had Louisa County schools on before, City of Charlottesville on before. Let's find somebody new. Oh, Nelson County schools. Let me see who the Nelson County superintendent is. Jeff Comer. Let's call Jeff up and see if he'll do the show very politely. Yes, of course, love to do it. Next few days, I see an article in the newspaper. Welcome to the first year new to Nelson County Schools. And I'm like, wow, this gentleman is either really nice or doesn't know what the heck he's getting into. I'm not sure which of that we fall into with this. But thank you both for being here. And Pam, were you telling me about changing your plane tickets and getting on the road to just to come down here and make this show in time?
Absolutely. I tell you, Rick, I've got a 27-year-old living in New York City, had a little trip planned up to celebrate his birthday with him. And yesterday, it was an interesting situation to have the train actually miss Penn Station on the way out and end up getting rerouted hours later and having to stay over in D.C. this morning. But I was up on the road early this morning and ready to go because this is a show that I value every year, a chance to really share the highlights of what's going on in Albemarle and be able to chat a little bit about some of the challenges that we educators face here in the United States, the state, as well as here locally.
The dedication of Pam Moran and Albemarle County School System. So thanks to both of you. 11:03 here on the Wake Up Call, 91.9 Charlottesville and Richmond's 103. .1. So write down the phone number. We'll take some calls a little later in the hour if you're interested with your questions or topics about public schools. Phone number 434-979-0919. Again, Jeff Comer from Nelson County, Pam Moran from Albemarle County. So let's jump right into it. Is the role of public school education K through 12 changing? Ladies first. Pam?
Oh, gosh. I think that education is something that the role of public education in this country probably changes every few decades in terms of trying to meet the needs of young people going out into a changing workforce, changing society, changing community. And I don't think that this generation's any different as we sit here in 2014. I don't think anybody that's out there in this country today is missing the fact that, for example, how technology is changing all of our lives and certainly affecting our schools as well in positive ways and sometimes in ways that are a little less positive.
Jeff, I mean, do you agree with that? Because there are some people who say that education really has not changed because it's meant to give people a basic start in their life, to teach citizenship as much as anything else. And there are others who say, you know what, you don't even have to go to school anymore as long as you have an interest and a passion for something and you can go educate yourself because of technology. And there are some who say, nope, K through 12, because the basic education level now is not a high school graduate degree. It is a college degree. And for what used to be a college BA or BS, now you have to have a master's degree in something to keep pace with the education level.
Well, the traditional brick-and-mortar schools, I think, are evolving in the sense that students are no longer confined to learning within their own buildings. And, for example, in Nelson County, being a rural county, we are limited in our resources in terms of what we can access. But the neat thing about the world we're living in today, that access is always easily available. And, for example, the typical media center in a high school, you'll go in and you'll see that a lot of newer schools are downsizing these facilities dramatically. And naturally, the thought being, why try to produce internally what students can actually gravitate to externally, both within the school building and outside? Well, that's a huge advantage for students in today's world, especially in situations where like Nelson, where it is a rural area where students maybe are limited not only to exposure but even by travel to some of these places. The world of education, I think, has changed. Unfortunately, the role of public education at times sometimes lags behind. And I think that's one of our big challenges as superintendents is to try to at least narrow the distance between the two.
That brings up a question that just popped into my head. So you talk about technology making the media center better, which I think for many people that's the library. And so you have, by adding technology, you have expanded the opportunities for the student. But has it reduced the actual level of learning, because now you can pull out your phone and Google up the answer to the question?
Boy, that's a good question, Rick, and it is one that you have to let pop up out of the focus that we have in education today. Obviously, our kids have access to resources that, for me, when I was in high school with a very traditional library, I didn't have access. It was a very static system because you went in, you took a book off the shelf. It might have been published 20 years before you took it out of the library, or five. But one of the things that we know is that information in text today and in books today oftentimes is out of date on the day that it's actually runs off of the digital press, so to speak. One of the things that we know that our kids have access today when they are able to Google is oftentimes very up-to-date information that reflects how things have changed, whether it's in science or history or current events. I think one of the biggest challenges we have, which is a new skill, is that where books that were curated by librarians to go into libraries, that we really accepted that our librarians were looking out for credible sources, for reliable sources. And the internet is wide open. You can find things that are incredibly credible and reliable as sources, and you can find things that are very spurious. And I think that one of the big skill sets that our kids have to learn, and even adults, is how do you really become a curator yourself and figure out what's the source here and is it something that I can use? As far as I think the other piece is that there's basic knowledge that I think that we would all say that over time we would want our kids to learn, and that you've got to have something to think with. And so you can't just always be dependent upon that the very next thing that you need to know that you're going to have to go look it up on Google or in some internet resource. That there are just certain things that we want our kids to know as well as to understand, and skill sets we want them to be able to do independent of the internet.
So Jeff, if we to talk about this in two different parts, part A being Pam's comment that the school system now has, I don't know if it's just expanded, but slightly altered the parenthesis around which the education comes or is needed to do, to teach you to be your own, what was the word, your own curator for the learning. But while still, the word that I continue to use is citizenship, continue to teach you about how to be what our society calls to be a good person and the needs that we think you need to have to continue with that. But is that still Or are there other parts of that and gathering the information that are more difficult for a more rural school system like Nelson, because you can't in all areas just pull out your phone and gather the answer?
That is a challenge. I was very pleased to find out when just a few weeks ago, talking to our tech director, that we do have an abundance of technology in place in Nelson County, to my surprise. We are pretty much close to all students in grades 3 through 12 having their own device available in the classroom, which I thought was just a great advantage for our students. The issue in Nelson County is that those students, for a large majority, are limited in the fact that they're able to use that same technology at home. Our bandwidth is limited in many of these rural areas. Of course, a great change as far as E-rate is concerned that we're going to see on the horizon is that more funding is going to be going to local school divisions for that purpose. And so that's a big advantage to folks in Nelson County that are limited by such. But I'll give you another example. Students who are now getting quite a number of dual enrollment college credits by means of distance learning, traditionally done by the local community college. That is a great opportunity for students. However, if a lot of times those students, it is almost like a one-to-one initiative in the fact you have a student focused on completing assignments with an instructor. Well, what students miss in that world that you can't replace, and this is why, to me, public education is always going to be important. A lot of times they miss the connections that are made in the classroom, from the sense of cooperative learning to teamwork to questioning others' thoughts. Those things are really, to me, the importance of the classroom. And the technology piece is a great tool to incorporate in that, but in terms of just to me, the best scenario for learning, it still is in a traditional sense in that classroom.
And I go with that, Rick, I think, is that, you know, we talk a lot about that technology or tools and that a pencil's a kind of technology, a book is a technology. It's just that today we say devices are technology. We tend to think about things that are computer-based mm-hmm. as being technology. But the reality is that people have been inventing mm-hmm. technologies as long as there have been people. But the thing that I do think about is that what Jeff is also speaking to is the role of the teacher. And in my mind, that kids working independent in isolation of either other students or of quality teaching are not going to necessarily get the connectivity, mm-hmm. The opportunities to be engaged in the dialogue, the mm-hmm. face-to-face time, that really I think is the rich mm-hmm. nature of learning together. Mm-hmm. That's what humans do, is they learn together. And so mm-hmm. I would certainly say that we see it as the technology is changing, but the essence of what has always been true going back to the days of Plato is that great teachers really fuel great mm-hmm. learning.
Our guests today, Pam Moran and Jeff Comer, superintendents of Albemarle and Nelson County Schools. We're talking about the changing role of education to start the hour. So for many people, an argument, not even an argument, just a statement would be made that we seem to have fewer arts and sciences in the buildings and more business and technology. True, fair, accurate?
Well, I think with the budget cuts that have been transparent both in Virginia and across the nation, unfortunately, those are some of the programs that have hit the chopping block. Now, personally, where I came from, we avoided those cuts because that was one of our primary purposes. That was a primary focus in our division. Thankfully, here in Nelson County, it appears to be a similar scenario. The arts are very strong. Not only the arts, but agricultural education is very strong. Once again, another program that's hit the chopping blocks in a lot of localities. But for a certain segment of students, those programs are crucial. Many students who do not excel, for example, in the sports arena, these are outlets for these students not only to develop their talents and abilities, but to get that positive self-esteem boost that so many of them need. And we're very fortunate, from my understanding, in Nelson. We have a very strong drama one-act play program. And it's really one of the talks of the community, along with our band program. So these are things that the community values, they treasure, and most importantly, it gives our students a great opportunity to develop their talents and excel.
Well, Pam, am I right in believing that the state is now requiring that high school graduates must have had a credit in economics or personal finance? So is that the state telling us that we need to pay more attention to business?
Well, I think what they're saying is that we need to pay more attention to making sure that when kids graduate, that they know how to handle their personal finances more than necessarily seeing it as business. Although, you know, we do have requirements within the standards of learning that kids really study things like economics. For example, we've had an eighth grade civics and economics program for a number of years across the state that's driven by the standards of learning. But one of the things that really emerged, and it came a little bit out of the big downturn of 2007, the economic downturn, was a real sense that we had a lot of people in this country that needed to really learn how to really more effectively understand money, whether it was in their own pockets, their savings accounts, their investments, their use of it for credit. And so that was one of the drivers for saying perhaps we need to add just a one credit course that our kids engage in that really is related to economics and personal finance.
What credit was, or was there a credit removed from the requirements to make this required credit happen? Did they take, instead of X number of credits in math, they reduced it by one so you can have personal finance? Or did you reduce an elective to make this happen?
Well, I think it would depend on the typical division as far as the number of credits they do require. But it's my recollection that did not take the place of anything per se. That it was an elective that was mandatory. So that would be the difference. I guess when you think of electives, you think that's a student option. So this is quote-unquote, a mandated elective for students. But the fact that students can take that as early as the ninth grade, it hasn't typically really been an issue with students waiting to their senior year and then needing that credit to graduate. So I think school divisions have really planned adequately to make sure that doesn't happen.
11:17 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Jeff Comer, superintendent at Nelson County Schools, here for his first year in the area. Pam Moran, she's a superintendent at our Albemarle County Schools. 434-979-0919. If you have a question for the two guests or a comment on the public school system.
Support today for WNRN comes from
Music Today. Based in Crozet, Music Today powers ticketing for local venues such as the Intellos Wireless Pavilion, the Southern Cafe and Music Hall, and the Jefferson Theater, and is official web stores for hundreds of artists, athletes, and entertainers. That's Music Today.
Willow Tree Apps, creators of WNRN's apps for Android and iPhone. Willow Tree is looking for developers to join their Charlottesville team. You can enjoy the perks of working for an award-winning mobile agency in a team environment. To learn more, it's willowtreeapps.com/jobs.
Automated Office Systems, providing WNRN with personalized local copier and printer service and maintenance. Automated Office Systems is headquarters for all of your computer needs, including sales and service of desktops, laptops, and tablets. That's Automated Office Systems, AOScorp.net.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us today. Again, talking about the public school system, Pam Moran and Jeff Comer, superintendents from Albemarle County and Nelson County Schools, 434-979-0919. If you want to call up, ask a question, make a comment, we'd appreciate hearing from you. So, changes to the SOL testing. We were talking about the change in electives. We were talking about how to make this happen, whether or not how it played into the school system. But there have been changes in these standards of learning testing, which I guess people had talked about for a while. There's been sort of the ongoing conversation about kids get tested too much, and finally it was changed. Pam, talk about how, what the changes are.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I think that there was a groundswell from both parents across the state as well as from educators who were seeing some of the impact of what we would all, or many of us would characterize as too much state testing, which then was driving even teachers to feel like that they needed to add more assessments in order to be sure kids were prepared to take the state test. One of the things that I think that we saw change about 3 years ago is that when we made some changes in the math test, that we're now seeing eight-year-olds that are spending as much as 3 and 4 hours on an end-of-the-year math test in third grade or fourth grader, even in high school. And so there has been a real pushback from a number of folks, including lots of parents around the state of Virginia, who are saying we maybe need to actually start opting our children out of some of these tests.
Not all parents know their fractions.
That's absolutely true. But one of the things that I think is that we are seeing a push back to what you might consider to be taking a step towards more reasonable state testing. So we've dropped at the third grade 2 test. We've dropped another test in fifth grade. We will be dropping 3 different tests, I think, at the middle school level. High school is still status quo as to what it's been. But I think that what the General Assembly, both, and it's really kind of a bipartisan focus on this, is that we need to also return some of the focus on local control back to our educators and our schools, and to really, really, really take the time to say what's a reasonable amount of assessment to make sure that we are testing the things that we'd like to know that kids across Virginia should learn and learn well. And where are some places that we can relieve some of that testing pressure? I think it's a good move. I think that we're going to find as we implement that this next year that we may actually say that we can even do a little more work in that area before we get to a place where we see it as really balanced.
Jeff, one of the things that the General Assembly discussion talks about is alternative assessment. Take out the required course, the required SOL tests, so that the individual schools can have more alternative assessment. Explain what that is and how Nelson County might be instituting that.
Well, I think Pam would agree that this being new, I think there's a committee that's working on some guidelines for school divisions. But I do think, as Pam alluded to, school divisions are going to have a lot of flexibility here, which is very exciting because the model that we have been, or the hand that we've been dealt with, so to speak, with multiple choice testing, is one model. And it's a model that parents are somewhat upset with because they are catching on that, is this really the best way to gauge whether or not our students are really learning the material? So alternative assessments is wonderful in the fact that local divisions can develop what they think are the right assessments to gauge that learning. Well, what I think could possibly transpire, this could be an exciting time for educators in Virginia because you will have an influx of educators across the state thinking outside the box in terms of assessments. Well, when you start thinking outside the box, you get very creative. Well, that creativity naturally leads to student creativity. So I think there's going to be a big emphasis on what can we really get creative with in order to allow students to get creative to demonstrate that they truly learn the material. And in turn, we may have a lot of very good models that are developed at the local level that could actually lend its way up to the state level. And I'm excited about the fact that my prediction is that within 10 years, and this is somewhat of a bold prediction, that we will actually be assessing students completely different than we are now. And this is step one in that process.
And Rick, I think a great example of what we really see as adding some balance to the kinds of state tests that we have that are, you know, the kids take them on one day, they get sent away, they get scored, the kids see whether they either got a pass or a not pass, that's what the parents get. but not a real sense of what are the kids really learning that represents deep learning. Here's an example of the kinds of things we're working with performance-based assessments right now in Albemarle, and we had several hundred teachers together this summer scoring assessments together. But here's one. The idea of a student in seventh grade being given documents around the science of atomic energy, the nature of sort of the political arena during World War II, being asked to look at the dimensions of a letter written to President Truman that they would construct in which they would need to make a case either for or against the dropping of an atomic bomb in World War II. And so what we're able to really see is a depth of thinking on the kids' part, their capability to analyze and bring in resources from multiple fields, both science as well as the political arena of that day, and then being able to construct a letter and use very precise language in very appropriate ways inside a letter to make that case. You can't test that with a multiple choice test. Now, what you can test is, do the kids know some of the basics of World War II? But we want to know, can kids actually become deep thinkers about the content that we're asking them to learn in a context that's meaningful to them?
That sounds as though it's multiple classroom testing, because you not only have to know some history, you have to know some science, you have to know some English grammar, et cetera. So who grades that?
Well, what we have is we bring our teachers together in the summertime, and for us locally, we have them score that together. So we have a rubric that says this is what it would look like if a student did that really well, or if they did it to what we would expect them to do, or if there were gaps that we would see that would tell us not just about an individual student, but potentially about where we needed to really amplify up the work that our teachers were doing program-wise. So our teachers would score that together, and then one of the things that we're really learning as teachers score those kinds of countywide assessments together is that they're learning from each other about, oh, what your kids really did well on that. What did you do in terms of instructional strategy or how you prepared them to think this way, so that it almost becomes a professional learning vehicle as well as a scoring vehicle? And I'll tell you, that's what a lot of the nations around the world do and talk about, that that's how they get higher levels of both teacher performance as well as student performance. So we're trying to emulate some of that in our own work.
That's Pam Moran. She's the superintendent of Albemarle County Schools. We also have Jeff Comer with us today, superintendent at Nelson County Schools, his first school year about to start. We're talking about the public school system and currently SOL testing. So fair or not, many people would say that the SOL tests weren't just to test the kids, they were also there to judge the teachers and the school system. What happens now if people, whether it's the parent, the community, state legislators, how do you go about testing to make sure that the teachers are doing their job and the schools deserve all the money that they're getting?
Well, in I guess we go back to the traditional sense and how good teachers used to be judged. They were evaluated at the local level by their administrators, and a format was used to give for that criteria that was established. We still have that in place with our new teacher evaluation instrument, which I think is a very good instrument. It's much more inclusive than the old instruments used to be. So we now have, I think, a wonderful model to gauge instruction on behalf of our administrators as far as what they're seeing in the classroom. Well, you have this natural accountability in place in all school divisions. And a lot of this accountability is based upon student growth scores, which to me, if you're an effective teacher, your kids naturally are going to grow. And how do you measure that growth? Sometimes that's the debatable aspect of how to measure that. But personally, I think it's nice to know that in the state of Virginia, all students essentially have the same curriculum. All divisions, for the most part, have the same teacher evaluation instrument. Some refinements here and there. I guess the next part boils down to just how strong are your leadership in those buildings? Do they have the skill set to gauge instruction and to gauge or good instruction and good teaching? Well, in terms, if you're doing those things, accountability is just part of the process. That is part of being a professional. We should be held accountable because we are considered professionals. For someone to say that we're going to measure your professionalism based strictly upon a multiple choice assessment, to me, is not an not only a somewhat of a dull statement in that sense, but it also negates the importance of professionalism. So I would like for, at least in Virginia, for our General Assembly to understand, we do take accountability important and in the terms of superintendents and as building level administrators. Let us be the ones who determine that, not an assessment, a one-day assessment for that, that many kids are not only having difficulty in, but we put a tremendous amount of time and resources into that product.
Rick, a couple things that I would add to that. One is that my granddad taught me something when I was young. It was a statement that he made, and I didn't understand it. I understand it more today. He said, you know, if all you got's a hammer, the whole world can look like a nail. And if that's the only hammer you've got in the toolbox. And I think sometimes that what we've done is that because assessment is one of the what you might consider the legs on the stool of great education. Curriculum, instruction, and assessment basically constitute what it takes to really run a public educational a school, and to be sure that you are providing the best teaching possible, a great curriculum, and then assessments that tell us, are kids learning what we think is worth learning? Now, that's something that I think that we will always have probably some version of state assessments that gives us some benchmark data of how our kids are doing against what we expect at the state level. And that may be reading. It may be some of the math pieces. It could be some things in history, et cetera. But I think that what happened was that the state test became a hammer. And all of a sudden, everything that we were doing was being driven by those tests. What that's done is it's really changed the context of some of the really important things we do, whether it is to remember that the arts are absolutely an incredible part of helping our children learn and grow and be well-rounded as they go out into society. The same thing with physical education, the same thing with career and technical education. Across the board, we want well-rounded, I think, young people who are ready for anything that life throws at them, and that's something that happens when you're building a curriculum that's rich and deep. I also think that the other piece of it is that as we really take a look at some of the other kind of rules and regulations that start to drive what educators do. Here's an example, and Jeff will know this. If either one of us have a kid that walks into our schools who speaks no English in high school, and they happen to show up 3 days before we're giving an SOL test in the spring, let's say in math, it's an expectation that that student be tested. So if they're registered, even though they speak no English, they have to take the test. And if they don't pass, which would be true typically of most of us if we were thrown into that situation in a country where we didn't speak that language, that score gets counted against our school's capability to meet some of the requirements of the state and the federal government. That makes no sense. And so one of the things that I talk about a lot is that we need to really be able to exert some common sense in how we go about implementing rules and regulations from the state and federal government. And when you start to hear about those kinds of situations, people start to really question the credibility of both the law, the guidelines, and the implementation of state testing. We think it should be something that gives us information that we need on what it's worth our kids spending their time learning. But I think that we've almost gone so far that I'll go back to the statement that the state test and the rules from the federal government about the administration and how that impacts our kids, that the whole world has become the nail for the state test.
11:34 on the wake-up call today. Our guests, Pam Moran and Jeff Comer from Nelson County and Albemarle County Schools. Be right back.
Our members are joined by the following underwriters in their support of WNRN.
T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying,
TNN specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. TNN offers FSC-certified printing. TNN Printing can be reached at t-nprinting.com.
L. Oppelman, serving Lynchburg for 122 years. In addition to loans, L. Oppelman deals in jewelry, musical instruments, rifles and handguns, game systems, TVs, cameras and tools, with new inventory arriving every day. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street, downtown Lynchburg.
Hi, I'm Jeff from the Maddie Project, the nonprofit foundation that provides support to pediatric cancer patients and their families in the Stanton, Waynesboro, Charlottesville, and local areas. The Maddie Project is the host charity and organizer for Shaken at the Station in downtown Stanton on Thursday evenings from 6 to 8:30. This summer, with a small donation each week, you can enjoy live music from local bands with all proceeds supporting the Maddie Project. For more information about us and the Shaken at the Station series, the MADEEproject.com. I'm Jeff, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being with us today as we talk about public schools with Jeff Comer, new to Nelson County, but after 31 years in public education, and Pam Moran, superintendent at Albemarle County Schools. Jeff, I've mentioned several times, first year in Nelson County, but several decades in the school system and previously a superintendent in the southwest part of the state. Pam, superintendent at Nelson County Schools since you were 12, very young at heart. We've talked about the state legislature and their emphasis on this and emphasis on that. And I know that there are always committees that meet, but does your local legislator, whether it's the representative or the senator, have you met them personally to have discussions about what is right and what has not been working well under the old SOL system?
Well, of course, being only in Nelson a month.
But right, that's why I refer to the
Rick,
fact that you were in Virginia, but in the southwest part of the state.
My local person is at this point. But back in southwest, as a region superintendents group, we did try to make that an emphasis. And I'll be honest, I was not probably in the forefront with that initiative, but we did have folks that were, and they would keep us updated. And our folks back in Southwest Virginia, they seemed very receptive to what we were saying. And, of course, we never got always the results we wanted, but they seemed to listen well. And that was important from our perspective, and I would hope that would be the same here.
We've, as long as I've been in Albemarle County, our school board and I meet with our legislators, both at the state and the federal level, and share perspectives on what it is, not just what we're against, Rick, but what also we're for. So we've been for changes in the assessment program to allow more flexibility at the local level to add those kind of deep, rich assessments, such as I described with the letter to President Truman that kids are asked to draft in seventh grade. But I also think that we are really for how do we really offer more customized options for kids. So I will tell you that Steve Landis, I met with him, and he really listened to the idea that we do have to go after some transformational aspects of what high schools need to look like to educate children for their future. So he introduced some legislation in the General Assembly on behalf of our school division and other school divisions around the state. That was enacted. The Secretary of Education's office said, let's take that out and get some good ideas on the table and fund some folks to basically do some innovation work in that area. So that's where this idea of a grant proposal that turned into a little bit of what I would call seed money for our high school of the future came from. But whether it's supporting our academies model, which gives kids career pathways across STEM-related education, we'll be offering a new Environmental Studies Academy out at Western Albemarle this year. Our two community charter schools, both Murray High School as well as the middle school community charter. The Fine Arts Academy we had this summer, our Leadership Academy, our coding academies that we've run. One of the things that I think people are really interested in is what should public education be for? And for me, it's about how do we help young people both develop the foundational knowledge and skills, but also to really provide them with opportunities to really explore their passions and for our teachers to do that as well. And I think that will really fuel an excitement and energy around what we do in our schools, more so than anything that comes out of typically the state or the federal government.
Now, Jeff, I realize I'm stereotyping here, but when Pam talks about all those academies and et cetera, does that make a rural county a superintendent jealous about, gosh, I wish we had enough money to do all that? Or do you already have enough money to do that and just maybe doing it the same way or in different manners?
Well, at this point, Rick, I'm not really sure exactly what we have in Nelson. I do know that we're starting a new initiative to try to provide two-year college degrees to our students in-house, which is exciting. And I know our
board of two-year college degrees.
Or, yes, an associate's degree for...
Right. So tell me, how do you do that while I'm still in high school? I'm familiar with the process of picking up a couple college credits while still in high school.
It's not quite as complicated as you would think. Now, this goes back to the role of distance learning. All these courses are typically taught on campus. I think Piedmont is the provider for us, and a lot of those are taught by in-house teachers who are endorsed and have the proper credentials to do those essentially college-level courses. I will speak of a program you said in terms of is it a disadvantage maybe not to have the resources or maybe the capability to do some things. Of course, it can be, but I think you have to really focus on what you can do. And I'll give you an example of something we did in Norton City, where I came from, which a very small school division, only two schools, a little over 800 students. But we had a problem just offering physics. We had no one endorsed in it. Our part-time folks were no longer an option. So I spoke to our community college, which was about 11 miles away, about the possibility of us bringing their physics teacher to our school division to teach the course. Of course, our school division would pay the salary. And that initial discussion led to what we called our dual enrollment academy, where we're now busing senior-level students on campus for half a day to complete their first year of college. We just completed the second year of the program. 34 students have gone through. All have been successful academically. So those initial conversations led to that, and logistically everything worked. We were close to the community college. We could bus it, our students fairly easily. So we had some advantages, but they were a true partner. So we've reached out and developed a partnership and made something work that typically, in the traditional sense, should not have worked, because a lot of times you feel confined and you feel maybe that you're lacking the resources and the capability to do things, but that's where you get back to thinking outside the box. And our teachers are going to find out I'm a big supporter of any teacher who is innovative and likes to think outside the box. Knowing that not all of those changes they'd like to do will work completely like they would like them to, but there's a lot of value in just going through that process.
All right, Nelson County folks, get excited. Jeff Gomer, your new school system superintendent, ready to bring it on and do some new things. Pam Brand, also here from Albemarle County Schools, superintendent. So, Pam, we touched upon it. You used the word transformation, and then you talked briefly about the new grant for High School of the Future. Now, when Jeff talks about how he worked that system out with the Norton City school system and their local community college with the physics, that's my idea of High School of the Future, but I have no idea what the High School of the Future is that you've been granted to work magic with. So talk about that.
Well, I would say that what the state's really interested in doing is trying to promote whether it's with a little bit of seed funding, and $20,000 is not a lot of money, but it does allow us to try out some things maybe that we would not have otherwise been able to do. But I think that one of the things that I'm hearing from folks at the General Assembly level, as well as at the Secretary of Education, as well as the State Superintendent, is we do need to really bolster the idea of teachers as entrepreneurs, teachers as innovators, because they have a lot of great ideas, and sometimes it's just giving permission or saying, how can we get to yes on this, as Jeff described. And I think that's what we're after. We're looking at, for example, at Albemarle High School has had incredible results with looking at STEM education at the Mesa Academy. But that school came.
What is that?
Our Math, Engineering, Science Academy. Okay. that is really oriented towards kids by the time they leave that are in that program. And there's over 200 students in that now. By the time they graduate, they've accrued somewhere in the neighborhood of 9+ engineering credits at the college level, in addition to other college coursework that they do. So it's an integrated fast-track curriculum towards kids that really want to pursue careers in engineering. But we had some teachers in the arts program to say, what would it look like if we developed an arts pathway that allows kids who really have a real love of the arts to come in and do somewhat of an interdisciplinary program in the arts as they're going through high school and really get some deep experience in a way that concentrates in the arts versus just taking an art class here, an art class there. So what we really want to do is to support teachers who would like to do some deeper thinking and some project work around what you might consider to be more interdisciplinary curriculum at the high school level or innovative curriculum at the high school level that's oriented towards in what ways are the arts being changed by technology so that as you maybe pursue a career in arts beyond high school, that perhaps what we would be doing is helping kids really look at what's the broadening workforce opportunity for people with real art skill sets. So we want to look at curriculum. We want to look at opportunities for kids in the community. One of the things that we're really after and our board is really focused in is how do our kids get more real-world experiences through things like internships and practicum studies or job shadowing in areas around the community. And so what can we do with that? I'll tell you, this summer we kind of pitched that out to our folks that work inside the school system and said, how could you provide internships to kids? And our head of technology said, boy, we could really give kids both a summer salary at a reasonable cost as well as experiences working with us to get our technology ready to go out in schools in August, new technologies, re-imaging, things like that. We actually believe that we probably saved our school division what would have been around $120,000 in additional cost if we had had to have a company do that work for us versus us doing it in-house. Our kids we put probably 20, 25 interns to work. They did fabulous work for us this summer. And so they've developed some experience in that work as well as we were able to get something back in terms of support for the school division. So how do we give kids more of that kind of an experiential education opportunity, which they're really looking for in this day and age? It's considered to be one of the top things that kids want are those kinds of experiences. So that would be the kind of thing that we would say. High schools of the future, as you said, Jeff, less brick-and-mortar time and perhaps more community-based time might be one of the themes that emerges from the future.
Pam Moran and Jeff Comer here on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call as we talk about the public high school system and high school of the future in some ways, 1148. Let me take a moment. We talk about internships and other ways to participate in the community. Maybe Pam and Jeff can take this back to their school systems. WNRN and The Wake Up Call are looking for a new producer for the show, Brandon going away to college. If you have interest in the program or are available to volunteer Sundays and have a basic ability with computers, we can teach you the rest. Stop by WNRN, give us a call, ask for Melissa or Rick. We'll be glad to help you learn how to do it. You don't have to do it every Sunday. If you're available 2 or 3 or 4 Sundays between 10:30 and 12:30, let us know. We'd love to have you. And as we talk about Sunday Morning Wake Up Call next Sunday, we'll be talking about kids and allergies with parents and a local doctor who specialize in allergies for children. But back to our show today, Pam Moran and Jeff Comer talking about public schools. You know, we've talked about the high school of the future and different classes to take, and the word entrepreneurship was used. I'm curious about entrepreneurship because it seems as though the public, the adult work world has changed. There are fewer long-term careers out there, certainly with stability. Benefits and pensions have changed. And so people need to be ready to work for themselves rather than being dependent on General Motors or IBM or somebody to hire them for 40 years and then give them a pension when they're done. And so being self-employed seems to be something to me that the current high school and college kids need to be prepared for. Am I right? Am I wrong? And how do the school systems work on that if it is important?
Well, one of the, I guess, another mandate for us as school divisions is to prepare kids for the 21st century in terms of work readiness and work skills. And there's a big emphasis on those products today in our classrooms. Now, that's an initiative that sometimes is easier said than done. As Pam alluded to, what really prepares your kids for a work field that in some ways doesn't even exist for a lot of our students at this point in time? So it's sometimes difficult to prepare for a certain career that's not even existed. So you really, really have to think in terms of, well, the particular skill may not be known, but it is going to take a particular skill set for whatever is on the horizon. So as Pam alluded to, that's where we get back to this focus on kids not only, I think, being great communicators in terms of particularly written expression, which is still very important in education, believe it or not, and not texting, so to speak, but also in terms of teaming and working together and being able to do things cooperatively in a project-based setting, as Pam alluded to. Those are things that sometimes are restricted in the classroom, so you have to look at other ways to accomplish that. And Pam came up with shared some great examples of some things they're doing. The internship model, that is a super way to get kids out in the field and not only explore some careers, but look at the mindsets that's behind those occupations. And as you just alluded to, an intern here, for example, you have a kid that walks in that would have never had that opportunity and has a possible interest, which may lead to a strong interest. And then down the road, that kid is in a career that may have started as an internship. And so things like that, they're a little more difficult in places like Nelson because you're a little confined with the careers per se. There's a lot of great agricultural opportunities, for example, which are unique in a lot of ways. But here in Charlottesville and the city of Charlottesville, Albemarle, I think that would be somewhat of an advantage. But once again, there's other ways to tackle that without going on site, so to speak. I think you can also look at things through a distance model and just being able to communicate with people through the internet and things of that nature. You can still explore some of those things.
I think, you know, we're not to put the focus on WNRN too much, but I think that this program here has sent two of the former producers are now on the WNRN board. One of them is now a paid full-time employee for the WNRN radio station, doing things that they love to do. So, the internship, wherever you go, if you have a possible interest, mm-hmm. Jeff, that becomes a passionate interest, mm-hmm. It's out there for you somewhere.
I was just going to say, Rick, that one of the things that I think is a big challenge when we start talking about high schools of the future and things like internships and, you know, projects that kids do and so forth, is that while the workforce is one end in mind, that I like to think about that what we do in public education as being about helping our kids really be lifelong learning ready. And that means that they're ready to become adult citizens. They're ready to have their own families and be contributors in communities. They are ready to learn for the rest of their lives, and that they're ready for a workforce that's going to constantly change. I imagine that if we were to go back and look at pictures in this room spanning 30 years, that we would see that the space has changed over time with the kinds of equipment that are here. But there are probably four things that are consistent in terms of skill sets that you use today in the same way that maybe you used them when you were a younger generation person working here. And that is that you do have to be, as Jeff said, a good communicator. We also think that our kids need to be really good critical thinkers and problem solvers. They have to reason. They need to be creative. They need to be able to come up with new solutions to problems they haven't seen before, as well as just to exercise creativity in their life. And they need to be able to learn how to work both independently as well as with other people well, even people that maybe they wouldn't choose to be their friends outside of the workforce. And so in my mind, those are real transportable skills that kids, if they learn those well, they can take them with them anywhere they go in life, whether it's in the family or whether it's in the workforce or whether it's at the University of Virginia or PVCC. Mm-hmm. What I think is that the content's going to change and the context is going to continue to evolve. But there are just certain skill sets, as you said, mm-hmm. that really transcend whether it's 1955 working at General Motors or 2014 working at Willa Apps, which is one of your advertisers today.
Again, Pam Moran and Jeff Comer here from Albemarle County and Nelson County Schools. Just a few minutes left before Mike Nichols and Les Temps-Purdue start up. And so it's hard to pick it seems like every topic we could talk about for quite some time, but only about 4 minutes left to talk about the retention of highly qualified teachers. You're trying to teach the learning of the history or math, you're trying to teach good behavior and citizenship through leadership, or how to find your passion, you have to have a good teacher. And it seems like from the headlines that teachers are retiring earlier than they used to, and qualified people aren't even making the decision to become teachers.
Well, of course, with budget reductions, I guess you could look at it two ways. Is there a bigger pool of applicants, qualified applicants, because of that, or a less pool? I think the pool is still there and probably increasing, but I think what you have to do as a school division now is look at ways to make the profession attractive based strictly not on salary. And a lot of things you can do there is just be supportive. Do you have policies and programs in place that support teachers, that provide good mentors, that give them opportunities, like I said, to be innovative, be creative? So I think that's the next step that school divisions have to look at, is what can we do? Salaries, you know, we're all restricted now with budget, but what are other things you can do to make the profession very appealing?
I would say that education is not a volunteer job, but what I know is that our teachers at times feel like that they are asked to do things above and beyond what other people in companion workforces are not asked to do. I know that because of budget cuts, we have teachers that take money out of their pockets, whether it's to buy snacks for kids that they worry about coming in maybe from homes where they've not had breakfast, to teachers buying sometimes some of the basics that you would want to have in a classroom. It could be pencils, or it could be materials for kids to use, or, you know, really good literature books that they want to add to their class library collections. Most people don't go to work and expect their employer to ask them to do that. And yet our teachers, I think, feel like that because they're so passionate about their jobs, they're willing to do whatever it takes, including taking money out of their pockets. We know from some recent research that's been released, Jeff, that over the past decade and a half, that the United States has not kept up in terms of percentage of compensation growth for teacher educators as occurred in the world. In fact, we're in, I think, the bottom quartile. So other nations are recognizing that they've got to step up and really add some compensation in. And compensation can come in a lot of different ways, but to really make sure that we are doing things that help us attract a competitive workforce. And I have to tell you, you know, we're right now potentially looking for somebody with some programming expertise to work in one of our high school programs. If you're a person coming out of college, whether it's community college or four-year college, with capability to do programming, you can go to work over at Willa Apps and do far better than you're going to get in terms of salary as a public educator. And yet we need people that have great intelligence, love of children, and a real commitment and passion for the field. And you aren't going to get that if somebody thinks that they can't sustain their own family on a teacher salary. And that's a real challenge for us in this country, is figuring out what do we build, and if it can't be a comparable salary, what other things can we put into the mix that really have our teachers feel like this is a place where I want to stay for a lifetime. So
Jeff,
that's a challenge.
Finish us up. Take us out. Your goal for Nelson County for the year that might be different from what Nelson has experienced in the past.
Pretty simple. We want to miss less snow days this year, Rick. Seriously, just to go in, get to know the kids, the teachers, and have a successful year. So, and I anticipate that.
All right, Jeff Comer, mm-hmm. new to the area, superintendent of Nelson County Schools. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to be mm-hmm. with us. Pam Moran, superintendent of Albemarle County Schools, who apparently walked from New York City just to be here in time for today's program. Thank you, Pam, as always.
Delighted, Rick. Thank you for having mm-hmm. us. And I'll take a copy of that intern ad and see if I can't put it out there in our network.
You know you'll get it. Les Temps-Perdue up next. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
This has been your Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on WNRN. The Wake-Up Call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong and Max Cecilia Struther. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.